Hello and welcome to the SEAI's 180 Degrees podcast. I'm your host, Sinead Ryan, and over the course of the next 12 episodes, I'll be joined by special guests to talk about the state of play of Ireland's energy revolution, how we can be smarter energy users, what renewable technologies are coming into our homes and communities, and how small businesses can benefit from decarbonising now. Hello and welcome along to the SEAI's 180 Degrees podcast. I'm your host, Sinead Ryan, and this is episode 11, Energy Communities in Ireland. Now, in recent years, we are seeing more community groups coming together to tackle climate action in their local areas, everything from recycling to biodiversity to renewable energy products. They're both ambitious and important climate work that is happening locally and forming the backbone of what it means to be part of an Irish community. But today we'll zoom in on the growing number of sustainable energy community groups across the country working towards reducing their energy use and greenhouse gas emissions. These communities are not only adapting more sustainable energy behaviours, but they're also investing in high impact, far-reaching energy projects that are benefiting everybody. Now, to talk about this further, I'm delighted to be joined today by Ger O'Halloran, Vice Chair of the Connecting Cabra Sustainable Energy Committee. He'll be sharing his experience of being part of one of these community group projects. Pádraig Fallon is Chair of the GAA Green Club Steering Group, and he'll be talking about the impact of the GAA's Green Club initiative. And we have Ruth Buggy from the SEAI, who set up the Sustainable Energy Community Programme at the SEAI, and it has grown from zero to 850 active community groups. Ger, Pádraig, Ruth, you're all very welcome along to studio. I suppose to give us a kind of a starting point, Ruth, perhaps you would give us an idea of the journey, as they like to say on podcasts, and what a sustainable energy community is.
Brilliant. Thanks, Sinead. So when we set up the Sustainable Energy Community Network back in 2015, we were working to deliver on an energy white paper policy that was about engaging and enabling the energy citizen. And the community structure was the way that we felt was the best way to reach the most amount of people and to have the greatest impact. We would say a sustainable energy community is where a group of people come together with a shared interest in changing how community is made and used within their own area. And they do that by looking for energy efficiency project options, then looking at renewable energy options, and then looking for smart technology solutions to address the challenges and opportunities that they have within their own community space.
So it seems to me that in a lot of the episodes up to now, we've been talking about big umbrella stuff, you know, what the government is doing, what the SEAI is doing, all the big, huge projects from data centres to renewable energy, wind farms, all that. This sounds to me like something much closer to home because this is from the inside out. So how does an SEC emerge? How does it come together?
So it's usually a volunteer group that come together that have an interest in sustainability with their own area. So the drivers can be many. It can be trying to address air quality in the area, traffic. It can be about addressing energy poverty that they may see within their neighbours and within their own homes themselves. And just trying to understand of how they themselves can make a change. When we go out to meet a group of people in any format within SEAI, the first question they ask us is, what can I do? How do I start? And really understanding how you use energy as a household is the best way to learn. So if you know why and where you're using your energy, then you can look at options for making that a better choice. We make 50 to 100 energy decisions every day. What we have for breakfast, how many cups of tea we had, how we get to work, how we get to school. All of those choices are less conscious. Whereas when you start being part of a sustainable energy community, you start making much more sustainable choices deliberately. And those changes all add up to making a really big impact.
So this begins then with maybe one activist or somebody who is very interested in widening maybe the scope of the energy efficiencies that they're doing at home. You use the word volunteer there. Is it like, I don't know, tidy towns or Meals on Wheels?
It's a lot of tidy towns. It's a lot of Meals on Wheels. It's a lot of local development companies. It's a lot of organisations that are trying to do something. So what we say is we rarely meet somebody that only wears one hat in their community. So they're coming in with four or five hats. They're a GAA volunteer. They're in the church committee. They're in the school parents committee.
And we all know those people, don't we?
We do.
And they're the people
person.
You're likely to meet first when you move into a new area. Some of them are even looking for your vote.
And they want to help and they want to address challenges. And if you see somebody who's got a really big energy bill and they're stressed, best. There's ways to help them. There's information out there that we can help. And that's really what it's about. And Ger and I were having a conversation earlier, and he's going through some work himself we'll talk about later. But you become an expert when you've retrofitted your home, but you hope you never have to use that expertise again. But you can share that expertise with other people and help them overcome the challenges a bit easier than you did.
A bit like having a baby.
I'll leave that one with you.
You don't know what it feels like after the event, and you promise you'll never do it again. Anyway, I'm digressing. So it sounds to me then, Ruth, that there might be a lot of people out there who are saying, yeah, that's me, that's my community, that's my neighbour, that's me, you know, that's somebody down the road who does all that in our area or who is involved in other things, because committee people are on lots of committees, aren't they? They're never just on one. They might be more surprised to learn that they can get funding for a lot of these initiatives. So just talk to me briefly about the SEAI's role in these sustainable energy communities.
So the way the community network was set up, it was a peer learning and sharing network. So that the idea is that within the community, people can share their experience and their knowledge, but also within the 850 communities in the network, they can share their experience as well. So once you join the network, you're immediately given a welcome pack and you're provided with access to a mentor. And that mentor is free of charge. And that mentor will help you fulfil the shared ambition of your community. So we kind of talk about setting up a community charter that puts the priorities of the shared group together so that everybody knows what they're working towards and less chance of disharmony later on down the road. We also give 100% support to develop a local energy master plan. So that usually takes a couple of representative buildings within the community and a couple of representative house types and finds out what solutions are available to those and puts them together and builds what's called a register of opportunities. So now we know what's possible for that community. And I would say every community has a special set of opportunities, but they probably also have a special set of challenges. So this helps tailor the solutions to that community. And then we have funding through a capital grant program, but all of our grant programs are available to communities. So it shows which grant programs are available and they're supported then in making those applications to get the capital fund to deliver those solutions.
Okay, Ruth, so in terms of the master plan, tell us what people can expect from that.
Sure. So the Energy Master Plan looks at baselining the energy used within your community. So it looks at how, when, where and what types of energy are used. But it also looks at what types of resources and options are available. So it looks then at kind of your residential energy use, your business energy use, the transport energy use, and then looks at, well, what opportunities do you have to generate within the area, and builds that all into what's called kind of a register of opportunities. It will also look typically at a couple of house types that are representative of your area. Most communities have a replicated house type, so finding solutions for those house types will help the most number of people to change their homes and be able to upgrade them, and it'll give them a sense of how much that might cost. So it's really good about setting expectations and giving people a chance to understand what choices they have, and more importantly, which order to do it in, because where to start can be that big challenge. And so that Energy Master Plan is fully funded by SEI. We have a register of known consultants that can help develop those with the support of the community.
Okay. Now, let me move on to Ger O'Halloran. Ger, you have a very fancy title, the Vice Chair of the Connecting Gavra. Ruth was there talking about having this master plan and what's available in the community, but she mentioned something which I reckon you found very helpful, because in most communities or roads or neighbourhoods, they were all built around the same time, a lot of them, or at least have sections of them built in tranches, because that's the way we built houses. So you would find similarities then between house types and street types and water sewage systems and heating availability and all that kind of thing. Talk to me a little bit about how you got involved in your community to look at all of this. And we'll talk later on about what you did, but just tell me a little bit, because are you the one that's on 17 committees and knocking on people's doors and all of that?
Sounds very familiar, yeah. I was feeling kind of personally attacked there, so I was. I'm the vice chair of Connecting Cabra, and thanks so much for having me on as well. Like, it's great to be able to talk about my passion. Like, it's not my day job. I work as an engineer in biotech. So it's great to be able to kind of like share our experiences from like a community level and a voluntary level. I first got involved in sustainable energy communities when I was living in Phibsborough, and they launched their Energy Master Plan, which is funded by SEAI, back in 2021. And I remember at the time, for me, the climate crisis is this big impending thing, this big global issue. And it's always presented at, like, say, like a national level, an international level, maybe even regional. But this was here, finally, there was something that brought it down right to the local level, you know. It observed or measured what the current state of affairs is in the community and kind of showed the scale of the challenge, you know. But in that challenge, there's a huge opportunity, you know, as you kind of touched on there. where I'm from in Cabra, where I'm living in Cabra, there's very similar housing types across all the different types of communities. So we collaborate with two other community groups as part of the Triple Sec project. So Triple Sec, the three SECs, Sustainable Energy Communities ourselves in Cabra, Phibsborough and Stonybatter. And within that, within those communities, there's very similar housing types. So there's the anyone who's been to Cabra, they know they're the old kind of corporate Dublin corporation houses. They're built like bomb shelters, very, very well built, but quite drafty, can be expensive to heat as well. They don't hold the heat very well. Stonybatter and Phibsborough have a lot of red brick houses, so they present their own challenges as well. And similarly with Cabra as well, they're solid walled houses. So a lot of modern building materials aren't necessarily suited to retrofitting those older houses. So that's the kind of value that a community group can bring, is that local knowledge of the different housing types that are there, and construct a plan a representative plan to how to retrofit like a typical house in each area, in each community.
Well, that immediately sounds helpful because it means everybody isn't starting from scratch or reinventing the wheel in their own, you know, if you decide to retrofit your house, which is a pretty huge decision, you're not kind of saying, I don't know where to start. I don't know where to begin. I don't know what I need. There's somewhere you can go that's already done it, or that, as you say, has this master plan. So did you find locals in the community found that of itself, you know, just a good starting?
Yeah, plan? And like that's personally where I find the energy master plan so valuable as well in themselves, that you actually start to learn so much. I volunteer in a couple of different community groups in general as well. And what I find in my community work is that there's a lot of duplication. People are facing the same problems, but because there's not as much communication or collaboration as there might should be, that a lot of the same problems have been solved somewhere else, and we can start to speed things up. And that's what needs to happen with the energy transition, right? Is that there's a sense of urgency now. So when we can learn from the mistakes of others or the experience of others, that's when we can really speed things up. So one of the goals of this Triple Sec project is to share our experiences very widely, so other community groups can do things quicker, and they don't have to make the same mistakes, and they can learn from our mistakes as a community as well.
Right, so that's a great starting point then for anybody who wants to get involved. The kind of the legwork has been done on a lot of it, and they can kind of pitch in then at any stage. Mm-hmm. Okay, we'll come back to you in a while to chat about what individual projects happened and what they all cost and all of that, Gerard. I'd like to bring in now Pádraig Fallon. Now, Pádraig, you have a different type of community. In your case, it is the very well-known community of GAA, and it is vast. It's countrywide, every local area has a GAA club, or at least aspirations to have one. And you are in charge of the Green Clubs initiative. So talk to us a little bit about what the Green Clubs initiative is for those that don't know, and what it is that you do.
So first of all, obviously the GAA, we're about our games and making it possible for our boys and girls to play our games and to feel part of their communities. But in the running of our games, we have lots of facilities, lots of ground, lots of roof space, lots of indoor space. So we consume a lot of resources. And a number of years ago, a number of clubs all around the country independently were looking at their impact on the environment, like my own club did in the Clans. Instinctively, we reached out to Crow Park for assistance, but it wasn't there. And hence, at that stage, they got the realization at HQ that we needed to do something, and the Green Clubs was born. We have hundreds of clubs in the formal process. We call it the phase two of the Green Clubs program, where we're mentoring clubs, etc. But we feel the message has got out to all of our clubs throughout the whole island that sustainability is key, and we have it on their agenda. We have it on the agenda of county boards. We have it on the agenda of Crow Park itself now. The impact has been very good. In my own club, we made massive savings on energy spend and in turn carbon emissions. And there is room for more work to be done, which we will get around to it someday. But it's an opportunity for us then to educate our communities. They have seen what we have done in our Clans facilities. They've seen our fantastic lights. It puts a different focus on our club. And our internal facilities are much more comfortable. There are events every weekend. in the hall. Before you couldn't go into it, it was an ice box. We have meeting rooms that are being used by the community organisations, we have our bar facility, so everybody can see the benefit that it has for us, and they're taking that home.
And Ger was talking about, you know, the importance of having a master plan, a kind of a pathway that you know where you want to be and how to get there. Did you have the same thing?
Well, so, I mean, first of all, to create the toolkit, we reached out to the experts, Ruth, SEI, Irish Water, Law Pro, the Biodiversity Data Centre, the National Waste Centres. We took them on board. They became our partners, and they were delighted to work with us because they have their own KPIs and they wanted to get to our community through us. And so we were delighted to help. So we didn't sit around a table in Crow Park ourselves and developing this
tool. Scratching our heads and
absolutely
working out how to do this.
Yeah, not at all.
Experts there for it.
Ruth gave us the detail on energy, and it has been and we've been backed up by Minister Eamon Ryan, it has to be said. He has financed this program. We are reaching not alone our own communities, but we have other sporting organisations that have reached out and have asked if they can really just copy what we're doing.
Oh, sure. Everybody wants to copy
the
GAA. It's a success story. So talk to me then about the very specific things you did in Clonagale. You were talking there about, you know, using indoor space better, the all-important bar, the floodlights. Yes. But what was it like before and what is it like now because of this effort that you did?
Well, it's definitely chalk and cheese, first of all. Let me summarise it that way. But it took the leadership, first of all, to ask the question, well, how are we? And our chair at the time, Niall Kit Weldon, was insightful and felt we probably needed to look at our facilities. And I being an engineer, asked me to look at it. So we did a quick analysis and the figures were horrendous, Sinead. I mean, we were emitting on average a ton of carbon dioxide a week into the atmosphere. And we're not the biggest club, we're not the smallest, but if that was an average figure and you put that across our organisation, like, I mean, that's hundreds of thousands of tonnes on an annual basis. It was scary, and we knew we needed to do something. And that was because our building was inefficient. Our lights were the old technology, internal and external. There was a lack of awareness. We felt actually once we put some focus on it, that we felt that actually if we never spent any money, we felt we probably would have achieved 25%.
And aren't we seeing that time and time again? And we've seen it in this series as well, that when people are notified about little things that they can do, we've seen it in our homes. We see children coming home from school saying, oh, use this bin, or you're not allowed to do this, or our school taught us to do this. Simple signs, you know, things like turning off the taps while you're brushing your teeth, you know, don't leave the fridge open, just boil the amount of water you need in the kettle. Tiny, tiny things that you think won't make any difference at all. Is that the kind of thing that you were talking
absolutely
about?
Absolutely. I mean, as you say, the turn the temperature down, close the windows, close the doors. You know, there's no need for 10-minute showers. Get in and get out. So absolutely simple things that are all very, very doable. Don't cost anything. It's just making an awareness.
Okay. Great example, great example. Let me go back now to Ger, because yours is, you know, whatever about the GAA clubs, you have people in charge, you have a hierarchy, you have committees, you have all this saying, we can now make these decisions, here's what we're going to do. I wonder how different is it when it's a citizen-led initiative where you don't really have that structure. Mm-hmm. Does somebody have to put their hand up and say it's me, or how do you inform and get people on board?
Yeah, so great question. In this case, it was me. I put my hand up. I put myself forward to be the coordinator for the three different communities. And it was kind of touched on there. It's like giving people the opportunity to give back and to take action themselves. Most people, they really want to do the right thing when they're notified about it, and they just have to be like notified about it.
Did you have to cobble together a group of people locally to give you a help to do that then?
Yeah, no, that's a good question.
You're not the maestro of this, you're the organiser.
I'm coming in on the coattails, I'm standing on the shoulders of giants. Usually you need like a champion, right, driving this project forward. And we had that with our energy master plan. We had one volunteer who actually works in finance, and he's just really passionate about energy and the environment. And he drove the energy master plan forward, worked with the consultants, and actually really challenged the consultants as well. So their first draft that they produced, where went back to them with a load of very detailed points and feedback. And that really helps to sharpen the actual document and helps to make it a much stronger document as well. So when myself and my partner were looking for a house last year, And I got involved in buying a house and setting it up and starting to plan the energy retrofit of that. That's when I saw that there was an opportunity here. It's like, okay, like I'm going on that journey anyway. Our group is very interested in the energy side of things as well. It's like, can I combine the two and how can I take that forward? And we have a mentor in Dublin, an SEC mentor that is actually funded by the SEAI through CODEMA. Yep. And he actually highlighted the opportunity for this EU level project. And so this EU project is supported by the EU Commission and it's an EU-wide project and we were lucky enough to be selected for it. And it's basically them giving us technical support, project management support, some financial support as well to help us take that next step. There's a big challenge around moving from the plan to do, right? Mm. And that's something we really struggle with in Ireland in general. And it's just, it's a challenge, right? So you have the very detailed document, your action plan, but then it takes a bit of courage to actually kind of like go and do because you're risking failure when the rubber hits the road. It's always going to be a bit different, right? So from the EU perspective, the reason they're piloting this project is so they can get some insightful learnings about like what are the obstacles facing community groups who want to be part of the energy transition, who want to help, but like what are the challenges they're facing, right? Mm. And so we have a couple of challenges ourselves that we're facing at a local level in terms of project management support. Like I'm taking on that role, but I'm conscious that I'm not necessarily representative of the average volunteer and it wouldn't be fair to ask other volunteers to take on the amount that I'm taking on.
But I suppose with both of you, Pádraig and Ger, there is an audit of maybe skill sets in your area because GAA, okay, that's the thing that binds everybody in your organisation, Pádraig, but you have doctors and nurses and engineers and teachers and artists and all kinds of people in their job. Did you find that there was maybe a call out to say, I wonder who might be the best people to come on board with this? Or is it just, no, we have an existing committee and they're the people who are going to drive it?
Well, no, definitely there are people there. We went and we found them out and we got them around the table. We have clubs coming to us wondering how do they start, and we reassure them there are people in your community. There are people there, there are engineers. That might be electricians, there might be something. You just need to go find them. And you have to start with one leader, as Ger says. You have to have that may not know anything about it. Like in the clans, we had Niall Kid Weldon, who would admit to being not very technical.
But he had a passion. And maybe that's the starting point.
Absolutely.
Because you were the same, Ger. You're somebody who's passionate about this. I am struck by the fact that you're both engineers. Do you think that's a key a skill set that you could start with, or is it coincidence?
I think it's definitely helpful because the energy transition and the talk around energy can be very technical and very technocratic. We talk about specific heat capacity, U values, BERs, all this kind of stuff, and people just kind of get lost. And what people want from energy, right, is the ability to heat their home, for it not to be very expensive and for it to stay warm. Mm. And so like one of the challenges that I really enjoy about community work, I'm sure you're the same, Pádraig, is that like we can speak in a very technical language. So we're almost like translating for everyone else in the community, because like I volunteer with some phenomenally inspirational people and how much time and energy they give over. And I wouldn't say you necessarily need to be an engineer. Engineering can be helpful in terms of deciphering the technical language, but definitely not. I would encourage like anyone and everyone to volunteer and put themselves forward.
But it's helpful having that buffer, isn't it? That if people are coming saying, I'm looking at drawings here, I have no idea what these markings mean or these words mean, that you have somebody on board who can say, ah, I know what that is. Let me explain it to you in Peter and Jane language.
Yeah, we were in our comfort zone, I guess, there, you know, and we were able to explain the kilowatt hours, etc. This really people, and that's what I'm finding myself as well, that some people are actually running from this because they're scared of these terms, BER, kilowatt hours, coefficients, efficiencies, etc. And that's fine. But there are people that can, that do understand. So just find them and get the team going.
So Ruth, I suppose these SECs need to find their resident anoraks to start.
They do and they don't. Engineers are wonderful people. But there are other skill sets that we need as well.
And finance probably isn't any harm.
Finance and credit unions have been amazing in this space in terms of support. But I think some examples of communities that have taken an approach that was non-technical are wonderful too. There's a group in North Leitrim and their energy master plan is a art picture. And it's their vision of what their community could look like and all the different forms of energy that they could use. And that spoke to them as a way of communicating what their future could look
like.
So they set a vision. The maths is behind it, but setting that vision and getting people bought in
visually
is a picture. is a visual picture. And it's wonderful. And we also have a lovely one from a family resource centre, where two ladies who run the family resource centre, who wouldn't have a technical background and really saw people struggling with their bills. And one came up with the idea of developing a model called Watt Watchers. So the idea is you bring in your energy bill. Instead of getting on the scales every month, you can bring your energy bill and see how many watts you lost or gained in the month. So you don't need to understand anything beyond a lower number is better than a higher number.
And you can have a cream bun afterwards.
And the scale won't change. But it was a lovely way of breaking down that sense of this is too difficult for me into language that really works. I think communities know what the solutions are for their audience. And that's where the real, we can find engineers and we can put the support in, and they are wonderful. And they are, it's a huge part of what has made the communities work. But there are others too, and there is different ways of, so we just try and make sure there's a pathway for everybody, but engineers are great and so are others.
So it's finding the language within your community. And I suppose then Park View, that meant, you know, more matches can be played, we can take on more teams, we can heat up the dressing rooms. If people can vision that, they're more likely to be on board.
Absolutely. All of what you just said, Sinead, the facilities have never been busier. We had the massive reduction in our emissions, etc., but probably with a 30% increase in activity, easily. I mean, I still remember the first day we insisted when we turned our lights on for the first time, it was kids that got to play underneath it. And it was in the middle of October of 2021 or whatever now at this stage, cold night. And I grew up on a West of Ireland farm, so I know what it's like to let calves out onto a field for the first time. I describe them being like calves going out into a field. They just felt warm underneath the lights because they were different technology. So it lifted everybody, and it's been, we play lots of demand on our yeah. facilities now.
So they don't have to, not everybody has to understand the science bit. They can feel the change and then they want more of the change. Is that maybe a good way of looking at it?
No, absolutely, totally. They get engaged. They're asking questions. You know, who did your solar panels? What are the lights? Tell me about the lights. How much does it cost? Why are we so much warmer in the hall now? Oh, well, we insulated the attic. We did the walls. Okay, tell me about that. Where do we go? We mentioned SEI, local authorities. There are lots and lots of organisations that want to help, and there is funding there.
And get on board. And yeah. This is a good news story. Mm. And Jared, then I suppose your equivalent may be somebody walking into somebody else's house that has been retrofitted and suddenly realising, wow, I can take off my jacket. It's lovely and warm. You've the same house as I do. I'm frozen at home. How did you do it? Did you find that there was that buy-in because people saw it in action?
So, not yet. So, because when I say not yet, is that's one of the goals of the group is to have those open houses, you know, so it's that kind of like change because the houses are so similar. So you walk into a house that's like yours, but has been retrofitted and it's like, oh my God, you know, it's a really, it's a noticeable change. And that kind of like surprise can really stick with people. I've noted so we have like virtual webinars, we'd have in-person events as well. But when the messaging is from like a person who lives in your house, right? So our first webinar was on solar panels and we got like locals to talk about their experience and how they got on. I think that messaging really kind of cuts through like all the mainstream narrative that's out there that it's too expensive, it's too hard, it's too challenging, it's this, that, the other, right? Is that when someone who lives in the same house as you, is your neighbor who knows you, part of the community, says, I got this done, it's really beneficial, it saved me loads of money. Sometimes that's all you need. And it's like, oh, someone's already gone on this journey, I can do this as well.
It's like selling itself in the sense that, you know, they're not waiting on a leaflet to come through the door or for a politician to tell them what they should be doing or the SEAI running an ad campaign.
We're not trying to sell them
anything. It's their next door neighbour. Now, of course, financing is a big part of it. And there may be people who are very aspirational in local towns and communities to do all this stuff, maybe envious of walking into somebody else's house and they say, I can't afford this. But is the message that you don't have to, you can afford some of it, or you can just do it bit by bit, or maybe informing them of how bodies like the SEAI can offer grant aid towards it.
So yeah, that's another great point. And that's another deliverable is very technocratic, another goal of our project, right, is to develop these investment plans for the three typical housing types across our three communities. And they're graduated. So what I mean by that is that if you only have like up to 5 or 10,000 euro to spend, you can do this. And then if you have 10 to 20,000 euro, you can build on top of that and do this plan. And then if you want to go the full whack and you have access to that kind of funding, you can do the 40,000 euro one and you can get the full deep retrofit.
Brilliant.
But you can do it in stages because it builds and it's a cumulative effect, you know. So it's the key is to start with something and to start now, you know.
And maybe kind of tackle the people who don't know what they don't know. Mm-hmm. From a standing start, they haven't a clue what 1,000 euros buys them or 5,000 euros mm-hmm. buys them, and they may be too embarrassed to kind of go in and get a full quote and then say, oh look, I'm sorry, I can't afford any of that, and then they've walked away from the whole thing. So it provides a template in that way. While we're on that topic, Ruth, then talk to me about the supports that the SEII have. Porrick mentioned there the toolkit for communities. What is that? What's in it?
So that toolkit was developed by the GAA Green Clubs Committee, and through funding from the Climate Action Fund, it sets out a number of different options under the five pillars that were there. So it's biodiversity, wastewater, transport and energy. And the idea, each club can take this toolkit down in whichever area they're interested and take action under the various steps that will work for all clubs. So it's a really easy to use, freely available toolkit. And as Borg said, other sports groups have come to him. I've had community creches come looking for supports. And like, this sets out which action and what steps you should take and in which order to do them in for the greatest impact. So they're really good ways of demonstrating small actions collectively make a big impact.
And we know that there are a lot of, we mentioned finance briefly earlier, but there are a lot of one-stop shops now in this regard where you have community financers like credit unions or, you know, micro enterprise boards, LEOs and banks who are prepared to come on board, not least because it looks good for them because they're in their local communities as well. So that can be helpful. And Ruth, in terms of then, okay, so you can apply, you can get the toolkit, you can have somebody come out and assess it and all of that. Well, what are the legalities involved? Is it terribly complicated to set up an SEC?
No, our SEC was set up with a very low barrier to entry. So you don't even need to have any sort of company registration number. You don't even need to have a bank account. You just have to have a commitment to want to share and learn from your experience. So joining the network is as simple as going on our website, filling out what would be a 3-page form in about 2 minutes. And within an hour, you'll get your notice that you've been accepted into the network, assuming you've met the very basic criteria that we set out. And within that, you then immediately join a network of over 850 communities to whom you can then share and learn from and with, and you get your mentor. So it's a really easy first step for people who are interested. There is no commitment to take any action from that point. So you may just come in with a wish to learn, and that's all you ever intend to do. And that's fine. If you just want to raise awareness within your community of what choices are there, we'll support you at the speed you're able to move to the next stages in the programme. So we talk about learning and then planning and then doing as the kind of stages the communities do. It's more of a circle. So there's always learning and there's always planning and there's always doing. And doing can be hosting a community event. It can be doing an open door idea of your house being available to your centre. It can be the GAA club opening their door and letting other people experience it. But what a wonderful way for people to experience more comfort, better amenity and lower carbon emissions. So it tells the story that being better and greener isn't worse for you. You'll actually, it's a much more comfortable experience if you do it right.
Finally then, Porrick, what have you left to do? Or do we have time for the list? It sounds you're very far ahead in your project, but as Ruth said, there's always more.
Yes, and we've developed from the ground up. We need to bring the top down to meet us. We've made some good progress. We're working with senior management in Croke Park to get them focused on sustainability. Our new Uachtaráin, Gerald Burns, has said that he's going to be the most sustainable Uachtaráin, and we believe that we will get nothing but support from the senior leadership of the GAA, LGFA and Camogie Association.
All right. Well, they've heard it here if they hadn't before, so they'll get it. And you're still, to some extent, Ger, at the infancy of this. So what's next for you and your communities?
Yeah, so we're building on the success of our virtual webinar that we had back in February with further in-person events, such as supporting people to apply for the Better Homes Energy Scheme supported by SEAI, which is a 100% grant funded scheme for those in energy poverty, which is wonderful. Participate in the Stony Batter Fest, which is a local community festival to support renters and their retrofitting needs as well. And then also publishing our investment plans that I talked about earlier as well, to kind of give people that starting point so they don't like fear the blank page and they don't go into Google, how do I retrofit my home, and see a bunch of information. You know, we're part of this energy, the EU level project, until we have the support going on until November. But then, like, the work kind of only kind of builds, you know, because we have to, the energy transition is going to take about 15, 20 years, you know, so a lot more to do, like, you know.
If only it was used as a political slogan. Listen to me, do you have time for the day job?
Yeah, there's a nice bit of overlap, because I like to bring my professional engineering skills and my project management skills to the community work as well. I get to try a bunch of different things in community work and see what's what. Like, when I after work and stuff, when I come home and I go on a meeting, it's actually really refreshing going on a community meeting. You get many different opinions and you get something sharper rather than everyone just agreeing with the boss. You know,
brilliant. You don't feel like it's a busman's holiday. So Ruth, people, if they're excited by that prospect now and they want to do something on this, where will we direct them?
So to the SEI website under communities, there is a map there showing you where the 850 communities are. So in the first instance, see if a community already exists in your area and that it's working in a way that you're hoping for it to happen. And if there isn't one there, you can set one up really easily. And just to say to Rob, our very first energy master plan set out that every 250 homes spend about €1 million in energy. It's really easy to show you how to save 10%. So each community then has 100,000, and it's not hard to find 30% savings. So your community could have €300,000 washing around within its locality.
Sitting there waiting to be
for
saved.
You just to tap into it, and we can help with that.
Fantastic. All right. Well, Ger, Porrick and Ruth, thank you so much for joining us on this eye-opening episode of What is Happening Locally and Why Community-Driven Initiatives Are So Vital If We Are All to Meet Our Climate Targets. If you've enjoyed this episode of the 180 Degrees podcast, well then why not review and subscribe to it now? And of course, share it with family and friends. To find out more about renewables and energy, well then check out seai.ie.